welcome to the Raptor Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network, brought to you by Campbell's new Chunky Spicy Soup. It's time to get fired up. Make sure you find the Raptor Show wherever you listen to podcasts. Subscribe, please rate and review the program. I'm your host, Wim Lou. Join me today, Ahmed Mon, producer, co-host.
Yes, sir.
What's going on, man?
Doing well. Doing swell. Yeah. Happy to be here. Wearing green again.
Yeah.
We're both.
Likewise.
How are you wearing a jacket? I just realized this. It is very hot in the studio right now.
It's called fashion, you know?
Fashion?
I'm like Gary Trent Jr. on the bench. Hopefully, at least. That's my goal.
What if you start sweating?
That's what the water is for. Yeah. How you doing, man? You're good?
Yeah, yeah. All good. Excited for tonight's game. Raptors Pistons, another bout.
Yes, another bout. Yeah,
another bout. Dwayne Casey on yesterday.
He enlightened us
a little bit about some of the back history between him and the Raptors. And that was a great chat that you had. A lot of compliments from the people internally about that conversation.
Oh, so kudos. Really?
Yeah.
Okay. These are Sportsnet big wigs?
Yeah, they just like the flow of it and some of the stuff you got out of it. So,
yeah.
Well done.
I think, thank you, first off. I think with Dwayne, he's just like one of the easiest interviews possible. He is just like, obviously, he has a lot of stories to tell. He's the head coach in a very pivotal point in the Raptors' history, but he also opens up and has always been very generous with his time. So, again, I hope Dwayne does not know all the coverage I've done over the years. And I honestly, I did feel kind of bad about it, only in the sense that in the moment, there's obviously things that you can kind of nitpick at. But sure. I think when you step back, bigger picture, especially as time moves on, and this will happen with everybody that moves on, it's just like all that really remains is the good stuff.
Yeah.
And then maybe once in a while, you're curious about a couple of items. But it was great to go down memory lane with Dwayne yesterday. And
I was talking to Jeff Blair earlier, and the Dwayne Casey interview, again, it came up, and he was saying that how much he would have enjoyed if Dwayne was the one who won a title with the Toronto Raptors. And also it brings up the point of, like, would he still be the coach of the team if he won the championship, if he wasn't let go? Now, hey.
He did. By the way, Dwayne did say he joked with LeBron. He's like, you're the reason I'm in Detroit, which is a great quote graphic out there, by the way.
But he very well could be.
That should be a quote graphic. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure it is somewhere out there.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll do it after this.
No, because, like, not only was it LeBronto, but that's the thing. It had aftershocks, you know? Like, it sent a lot of beloved players elsewhere. Obviously, DeMar. And JD covered that part, right? DeMar got his credit, absolutely. But, you know, he is a little bit right. Like, Dwayne is that one guy is, like, a little bit short. Having said that, though, I don't know, man. Nick made some really pivotal moves.
That's the thing.
So
that's the thing.
You can always be like, what if?
Yeah.
It's like, I don't know. It's like a smaller version of, like, some people talk about the Mark Jackson versus, like, Steve Kerr kind of thing, where similar situation to a degree. But Mark Jackson kind of laid the foundation for the Warriors based on what they were, really built up the defense. That's the common thing with young teams.
Mm-hmm.
They always come up through defense. A young team gets really good on defense first, and then they start getting better on offense. They implement more and more pieces, and then they're a two-way team.
The Raptors are doing the opposite.
Raptors are doing the opposite, which is a little bit interesting. We can maybe talk about that approach.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, that was a similar kind of ideal. And you know, and Steve Kerr has been the coach ever since.
Yeah.
I think there was a feeling that Nick would be our coach for a very long time, and it didn't quite work out that way, you know. But last season was last season, and this season, you know, we've moved on and pivoted to an entirely new Raptors team, which brings me to this Raptors roster quiz.
Here we go.
That I wanted to spring on you, okay?
Yep.
And don't worry, don't panic. There's nothing too bad about it. You've been covering the Raptors for a very long time.
In my hand.
Is that steady or not steady?
I think it's steady.
Okay, it's steady. Yeah, he's holding a steady hand for the podcast listeners. Got to narrate what's going on. But as I mentioned earlier, In previous shows, the Raptors have had 28 different players suit up and enter the game. So Christian Coloco, who was on the roster for a large part of this year, doesn't even count towards this, unfortunately.
Another one.
Yeah, so that actually should be 29, really. And I miss Christian greatly, and I hope he's doing okay.
Yeah.
Really hope he overcomes the blood clotting issue, and hopefully he's able to be clear to play in the future.
Me too.
Exactly, right? But even putting that aside, there have been 28 players who have put on a Raptors uniform this year and entered a Raptors game. Ahmed Mon, producer, co-host.
Yes.
How many of these 28 can you give me? So,
let's start with the OG starting lineup.
Mm-hmm.
Dennis, OG, Pascal, Scotty, Yak.
Mm,
and let's bring in Gary Trent Jr., Chris Boucher, Otto Porter Jr., Thad Young, Jalen McDaniels.
Okay.
Okay, so.
All right, hold on. Yeah. Let me. I should have wrote this down on paper or something. So, look, give me the list that you have so far again, please.
Yeah. So, Dennis Schroeder, OG Anunoby, yep. Scotty Barnes, Pascal Siakam, Jakob Poeltl. Mm-hmm. Then we're going Gary Trent Jr., Chris Boucher, Thad Young, Otto Porter Jr.
Okay.
And then Malachi Flynn. Okay.
Yes.
Jalen McDaniels.
Mm. That's a good one.
Yeah.
As in, that's a bad one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, let's go a little deeper now. Grady Dick, mm-hmm. Marquise Noel.
Yeah, Jordan. Marquise Noel is a deep cut. He only ended up playing 4 minutes. Only ever appeared in one game. Yeah, that was a little surprising.
He got his first points, too, in that game, right?
He did get – no, he made two free throws. Yeah, he made two free throws. Yeah, good for him. I'm actually really happy for him. That's not a –
Me too.
Yeah. You said Precious, though?
I have not.
Oh, okay, you can, my bad. Sorry.
I was going deeper. I'll give you Precious. Ron Harper Jr.
Ron Harper Jr. Yeah, I was going deep with that. Crazy deep cut. Yeah,
he came hard.
The same game as Marquise Noel. He's 27th on this list on Basketball Reference. It's sorted by minutes.
That must have been a blowout.
He played 4 minutes, just like Marquise did.
Yeah.
And Ron Harper did get into a game. Also, best wishes to him. He had ACL surgery.
Yes.
So hopefully he's able to come back. But he's not even with the 905 no more. Yeah.
DJ Carton.
Mm.
Now we're going to.
Now we're cooking with gas right now.
Yeah, we're going to go to 2024 now.
Yeah, nice.
The amount of teams that we've had. Unreal.
We've had 28 players on the roster. We've had 29 players on the roster.
Goodness.
This doesn't even count like Spencer Dinwiddie technically was traded to Toronto, but got waived before he ever set foot on a plane.
Yeah.
So I'm not even going to count that kind of stuff.
Yeah. So okay. Grady, I already said Grady Dick.
You said Otto?
I did say Otto.
Yeah, okay, good.
I did.
Okay, Otto.
So Jontay Porter.
Yep.
Javon Freeman Liberty.
Yep. So there are certain guys on the roster right now that I don't know if you've listed. Like pretty prominent ones.
Yeah. I'm going through them. I'm calculating right now. I'm processing everything. I'm going through because so we got RJ, we got IQ.
Mm-hmm. Yep, there you go.
Yeah, those two. Oche.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, right? Yeah, mm-hmm. Oche. I said Jonte already.
Other piece of that trade?
Do you, what number am I at?
So, by my count, you have 1, 2,
yeah,
3, 4, 5, 6, 7 players left.
Wow, 7.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I might have miscounted because again, I should have wrote it on paper so I could scratch it.
That's all good.
Yeah.
So DJ, Carton already said.
Yeah. What about the other piece in the Ochai trade, man?
Oh, Kelly. Geez.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
The other piece in the Pascal trade?
Jordan Nwora and, Bruce Brown.
There you go.
Right?
There you go.
Sorry. So, the amount of names is like, it's kind of like.
No, you're doing really well. There's
confusing
only three
me
more,
in my mind because you're right. Like Bruce played yesterday, right? Last game against the Denver Nuggets. He's been
memorable.
Memorable? Yeah.
That's the word. There you go.
Okay. So
there's one more player that's been on the season with the Raptors this whole season I don't think you've said yet.
Garrett Temple.
That's right. Garrett Temple, by the way, scheduled to appear on the Raptors show tomorrow. So stay tuned.
Excited for that.
Very excited for that.
Yeah.
Is that tomorrow? Tomorrow's Thursday, yeah.
Tomorrow.
Yeah. So they got three more guys left. Three more players left out of the 28 who have put on a Raptors uniform
and
taken the court this year.
Is it version 1, 2, or 3 of the roster?
It's honestly, two of them are currently on the roster. One of them was briefly on the roster.
Yeah.
That was the one I thought it would really trip you up.
Mohamedou Gay.
Okay, that's good.
Yeah. Mohamedou.
Don't do that. Don't do that, Derek.
I don't know what he said, but.
He said he put the Darko Rajakovic, ooh. Drop it again for Ahmed.
Thank you.
Yeah, you weren't here for that portion of the show. The Raptors show have also had some changes. Not exactly 28 co-hosts.
Yeah.
Although recently, I guess we have cycled through
sort
a whole
of,
bunch.
We're getting close.
But there was an interview I did with Darko, me and Blake. And we was live through Zoom. And this is like my second time interviewing Darko. And I think Blake, we were playing in a media game, and Blake was like, you know, as a joking question, I was like, hey, Darko, like, what kind of tips do you have for me as a coach? Because Blake was coaching the other team against my team. What kind of, scouting report or should I put together for Will, my co-host? And then
Will who?
Then Darko was like, Will who? That one killed me, man. Darko, I've already talked to you and interviewed you before that, too. It's all good. So it's what I deserve. It's fine.
Yeah. For the sake of the segment, you can just tell me them.
There's one more guy on the team right now who got into one game for 5 minutes this season. And it was recently, within the last month. He was back here in Toronto. It was the Pelicans game where they lost, I believe.
I've
he was here. He's here on a 10-day.
I've removed that from my memory. Oh, 10-day dude.
Yeah, 10-day dude.
10-day dude. Yeah,
yeah.
It's slipping me right now.
Jemias Ramsey.
Oh, right.
Yeah, yeah. And then there's one more. The last one, there's no way. We could be here all day and you wouldn't get this one. But the one clue I'll give you is that he wore number 3.
He wore number 3.
Obviously, OG wore number 3 for the longest time here in Toronto.
Kobe Simmons?
No.
No.
No, he only played for 905. That's okay. A good one, though. That's a super deep cut. That's an even deeper cut than this one.
He's played well, actually, recently. Guys, check him out.
He wore number 3, and I guess the other clue I'll give you is that he was also part of the Pascal trade. He also did an interview on the Raptor show, by the way. Shouts to Blake Murphy.
I'm missing someone very, very important here. It was Pascal, and it was Thad Young.
No. You already said Thad.
Yeah, I already said him. Otto Porter Jr.? I don't know.
Yeah, for the sake of the program, I'll move it along. Kyra Lewis Jr.
Oh, of course. The 28th player.
He took the port for 2 minutes in one game.
Goodness. War number 3. They requested that interview with the Raptors 905.
There you go.
Yeah.
28 players have worn a Raptors uniform.
And imagine how Darko feels.
Darko's like...
Can we be serious, though? Like, that's a lot, man. Yeah, that's a lot of players to go through.
Their names really are, man. That one's crazy. Yeah. Maybe we'll do the Raptors show co-host quiz tomorrow.
Yeah, jeez.
That one's a lot easier. It's just all my friends. Anyway, Amit, because there's a new rotation and odd new faces, I think the impetus here is people want to know, first off, who are these guys? What are they about? And what can they do to become impact players who can stay with the team long term, hopefully, and also, best case scenario, even enter a rotation? And that's sort of what you want to talk about today.
Yeah, let's start with Jonte Porter, because there was a clip that we were going to play yesterday of his brother talking about Jonte's history and where he is now and how talented he is. And we didn't get to play it, but it would be fun.
Because JD answers every question with 5 minutes.
He's talented, man. He knows how to talk. Our bosses know.
Hey, listen, I knew this guy before when you come in, man.
Yeah, yeah.
Sometimes with certain guests, you got to be the point guard. With certain guests, you got to be the shooting guard.
Yeah.
Ideally,
know how to play off ball too sometimes.
Ideally, you could be Jamal and Jokic and just like play off of each other, set each other up. But yeah.
Yeah.
Sometimes I'm Scott Skiles with 30 assists to Shaq. You know? So anyway. Jonte,
that version of Shaq, that was special.
Absolutely. Every version of Shaq was special, honestly.
Yeah, the latter couple versions. I don't know.
What's special isn't like, I can't believe how washed he is, but also he could still be impactful for like 5-10 minutes and be terrifying.
It was like the early stages, though, when he was he was a freak athlete and he could dribble the ball, he could drive. He actually had a little bit of shooting ability too, like low key.
But you never wanted to see him shoot. The whole point of watching Shaq was you wanted to see him like knock down 5 guys like it's 5-pin bowling.
He was
and
like Giannis before Giannis.
Down the rim.
Right? Giannis before Giannis. He was a bigger version of Giannis.
He's honestly, as athletic as Giannis is and as freakish as Giannis is, Shaq was on a different level.
Yeah. So, Jonte Porter, I mean, we can get that clip ready because I think the conversation around him is interesting because right now the Raptors, they got 3 centers essentially when they're healthy. You got Jakob, you got Kelly Olynyk, and you got Jonte. And now, to me, Jonte, he's earned the right to get like a really serious look for rotation minutes depending on what the Raptors are hoping for next season, like how good do they want to be? Sure, they want to make the playoffs, but you also want to develop players still. They're not in the mode where they're going to be for sure playing just Jakob and just Kelly. Like, they're still experimenting with players. They're developing them. And he was like a projected first-round pick before he got hurt, right? Mm-hmm. And Blake did that terrific piece about him, and his brother obviously has been singing his praises. And you can see that there's a very talented player.
His brother saved his career.
Yeah.
Because if you didn't read that piece, and this is like 2-3 months ago, as you mentioned, Blake wrote the piece on Jonte. After Jonte did an interview with us, too, by the way, with Blake. But Jonte explained that he was going to retire because he had suffered such a spate of, I believe, knee injuries.
Yeah.
And it was his brother, Michael, who also obviously went through just an incredibly difficult time with his back injuries, which also threatened his career before he even started. And Michael was the one who was like, I'm not going to let you quit. And then they got to the moments like they had last night. Or 2 nights ago now when they played Denver, where they were able to take that like post-game photo together. And like, it's always great when you can get any sort of family involved. But the fact that they both played well in that game, too, it's got to make it even more special. It's not like he was just there as a passenger and then they took a photo afterwards.
Yeah.
You know, they both played on the court against each other. And that was awesome.
As you said, I mean, he was giving Jokic problems for a little while.
Give him exactly four problems.
Exactly.
Exactly four stops.
But actually, we can play that clip now because it kind of goes right to it.
Got you. This is a clip of Michael Porter Jr. last night, or from two games ago, talking about his brother, Jonte.
I was really, really proud of Jonte. Not only just happy for him being out there, but also, you know, the way he played. I should have told the coaches beforehand. They said it was on me that he hit all those threes because they didn't know he could shoot as well as he can. But Jonte's always been like an on-par shooter with me, to be honest. When we shoot in the gym, just me and him, you know, he's shooting just as good as me. So he can shoot 40% in his league. I think 40% plus in his league as a big man. So I was happy for him the way he battled Nikola, some of those possessions. It's some of the best I've seen someone battle Nikola, and then, you know, Nikola still ends the game with 35, 17, and 12, so it just shows how special Nikola is. But as far as Jonte goes, he was balling, and it really was a cool moment for us to be out there together.
When you sort of reflect on your path to the NBA and now kind of coming full circle to be able to play again with your brother, just how emotional does that make you, or are you kind of past that point of your career?
Yeah, we got that moment in Memphis when he played in Memphis at one point, but he's dealt with a little trouble staying healthy since, but it's no surprise to me that he's out there. Jonte was he was one of the best players I ever played with growing up, and, you know, he classed up to play with me in college. We didn't get to play together, but he made the game so easy for me since we started playing together at fourth or fifth grade. So I've been telling, you know, you know, our GM and them, how good Jonte was. He played with us summer league. That's when I first was telling him about Jonte. But I think he was still struggling with some stuff. But now he's a really good player, really good passer, can shoot, can play defense. He's one of those guys that makes the game easy for other players. So it definitely is an emotional moment every time you get to play on the same NBA court as your brother. Just considering, you know, there's, what, 430 players in this league? Like, and, you know, your brother is one of those players. And then I got another brother, Javon, coming up. So, you know, our dad did a good job with us.
Mm. Serious brotherly love right there.
Oh, absolutely. If you ask me a question about my brother, I'd also give the same answer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's nice.
No, absolutely. Are you kidding me? You got to. But I think it's so cool that, first off, he's been advocating for him, right? Behind the scenes also, you know. Honestly, the Nuggets could have used a backup. You know, it wasn't like, I mean.
They still need one.
Who played better, him or like Zeke Nagy last night?
I mean, I would say.
Or, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it was Zeke.
Right.
Right now, they're not sure who's going to be their backup center during playoff time. You know, they've been going with the Aaron Gordon a lot because they weren't sure if Zeke's ready for those minutes. And we'll see what happens. But, yeah, I mean, Jonte was good. And this is what's so intriguing about him, right?
Yeah.
Is that, so, what I was getting at is like Chris Boucher, I mean, some of the discourse around him was kind of like, why isn't he playing? And one of the reasons that Darko did mention is that, you know, he's not exactly a center, and this is where they want to kind of go towards. They want to play through their centers. And if you have three capable centers in Jakob and also in Kelly, and they're great, right? Then you got Jonte. Where does he slot in? Like, of the people that we're going to talk about, he's probably the most NBA ready to some degree. Maybe Oche is probably up there too, but where does he play then? Where does he slot in? Are you going to do some double big stuff, or what's the plan for that? But like, I'm really intrigued by him.
That's the question, because I don't think we've seen Darko really play double big at all this season.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily need him to play double big. And I think that, I think especially nowadays in the league, like, it's pretty standard to have five out, four out at minimum, really. Mm-hmm. And I think for the way that he wants to play, I mean, all those cuts into the middle of the floor, the more that you have, especially bigger players who can't shoot, that just creates more and more congestion for those cuts to be cut off or intercepted or whatever, and then you don't see as much of that ball movement. So I totally understand why necessarily don't play two big lineups on defense or on offense. Defensively, I think that they've certainly had a lot of issues this year, and I feel like at least one of the patches would be playing more of those lineups with two bigs. But, yeah, I mean, unless he gets to the point where, and I think this is for Jonte, unless he gets to the point where he's moving really well and also shooting really well, in addition to the fact that he can also play in those posts, kind of like how Kelly can. Like, I think, especially now that you brought in Kelly, he's so versatile.
Mm-hmm.
And he stretches the floor enough, too, where he can be a bit of a four for you. And he's definitely more of a four defensively than he is a five defensively.
Yeah.
But in any case, I think now that you brought Kelly in, it should open up more options to play two bigs. But unless you do play two big, you're pretty much looking at him as a third string, you know, center. Yeah.
And so if we are talking, like, comparing him to Kelly then, so They can both shoot the ball. Probably Kelly, a little more experienced, a little better at it. But
I mean, absolutely.
Yeah, but then Jonte, like, he's much more mobile. You could probably, you're more willing to do some, no?
Than Kelly?
I think he's a bit faster. Right?
I mean, I wouldn't describe either of them as fast. Like, we're comparing, like, two minivans and seeing which one goes faster. But
I think
Kelly's, like, fleet of foot, and he's, like, light. And he travels from spot to spot, especially with the ball, better than Jonte does now, for sure.
The way Kelly leans on people is hilarious.
The whole way that Kelly plays is really, really, there's a lot to take off his game.
Sure.
Like, for the younger players. Like,
yeah,
he makes it work with very little.
But Jonte, he could space the floor. He's got this negative step that he can use off a shot fake, and like, it's one of the staples of Darko's system is that he wants to see pass fakes, shot fakes.
Mm-hmm.
That's where you kind of get the defense moving, get them guessing a little bit. And obviously his passing, like, there is something there to it.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, a lot of the players, like, they're turning the ball over a lot right now. But I think that's just because they're trying to, you know, make the right play, and they're being told, move the ball fast. And so turnovers are going to go with that. But he's an interesting player that –
yeah.
I think he's worthy of rotation minutes, but does it make sense for the Toronto Raptors right now? It's tricky. I mean, at least going forward.
Yeah, I think for me, absolutely, you got to retain Jonte.
Yeah.
Keep him going forward. I think that I've really wanted to see some depth at the center position this year, and he's done a really good job anytime Yaka's been out.
Sure.
That's when his minutes have come. And so, yeah, as for cracking the rotation, I think it probably would require a couple of things on his end to really force Darko's hand, but also I think Darko probably needs to consider playing him alongside Kelly a little bit more.
Yeah.
But I don't think I think next year, if he's your 10th man, like, it's probably acceptable, but I think it also means that he's taking some jumps.
Sure.
Yeah.
And I agree. They should re-sign him. It's just a matter of, like, can he actually get minutes other than, you know, an injury happening? With Jalen McDaniels and Jordan Nwora, they're very similar players, very similar situations where you want them to be able to, you know, execute within the offense, within the flow of the offense and their free-flowing style. You want them to cut. You want them to hit shots. You want them to play defense. And also you want to see the buy-in defensively. Do you know the game plan? Do you know what you're doing? Do you know the purpose? But I think Jordan, at least at this very moment, I'd give him a leg up because I think he's a better scorer.
Absolutely, he's a better scorer.
Yeah, and compared to Jalen. But the case for both of them is similar. Can you be like that kind of eighth, ninth person and provide stable minutes? And I think Jordan has probably a leg up in that area. I'm not sure how you feel about, I guess, Jalen at this point. We've kind of talked about it before, but
I'm not enjoying the game.
No,
I think that there's size and rebounding, but I also feel like a lot of times when you watch him, it's not like he's flying around and applying it to the point where it's like a big impact.
Sure,
maybe for a small, like, very selective bursts, it's happened, but it looks a little bit disengaged. Honestly, to be honest, like, Jordan sometimes comes in the game and looks disengaged too. So I think one of those guys got to find a different level of intensity, and that probably wins the spot more than anything else. Jordan's definitely a better shooter. If you go to warmups and you watch, I mean, first, you got to be so early to watch McDaniels warm up and Jordan warm up. No, I am, but it's like 2.5 hours before the game.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, most people aren't even let in. Yeah, there's a very notable difference in terms of who's the better shooter. It's like blatantly clear, but at the same time, I think for Jordan, defensively, he also gets into these big lapses that are like so
back cut.
Yeah. So again, that focus and intensity, it's not even so much about the rest of it. I think for guys like these guys who are probably going to be fighting for 9, maybe 10th in the rotation, that type of thing, it's about like how solid can you be and how reliable can you be at the bottom line things. Like, I don't need the luxury of like you being able to hit a pull up. Like, that might happen once every 3 games for you in your regular role.
Yeah.
But I need you to be able to come in and not spoil the defense and move the ball. And so I think Jordan, to me, I would rather keep Jordan. But the issue here is McDaniels has a contract next year for 4.5.
Yeah.
And it's guaranteed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Both have been kind of NBA.
And Jordan is a free agent.
Yeah. That's another part, too. For both of them, I wonder if it would help them if they had some stability and they also knew that, okay, these are, like, you have your offseason meeting, right? Heading into the offseason, you have your meeting with your coaching staff and the GM and so forth. And if one of them has their plan and they just, like, go like double down on it and have a really terrific offseason, I wonder if one of them could kind of find some stability with the Toronto Raptors. But that's like, I mean, we'll have to see what happens. But the last person before we go to commercial, Javon Freeman Liberty, right? Kind of the darling, I think, of Raptors Twitter to a degree. People have wanted to see him.
Is he?
And I think so.
Okay.
Right?
Interesting.
Or at least people were clamoring for him before he got the minute.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, he was. Yeah, a lot of support. Yeah.
But then, like, is he your backup point guard? Like, are you okay with him being your backup point guard next season? Because I could see them, like, if you want to really make a step and you also want to, like, enhance the veteran leadership, if you want to have, like, actually a person in-house that is playing minutes while also being a veteran, I wouldn't mind the idea of having, like, a veteran backup point guard. I have to look at some of the names, but that's, like, Do you want to give Javon that rope, or do you want to maybe find somebody a bit more stable?
What's interesting to me is I kind of like the Raptors' current roster build when everyone was healthy, because you had the starting lineup, which had RJ giving you an option, Emmanuel giving you an option, Scotty giving you an option, and then you always have the fact that Jakob could be in the high post and direct some offense from him there. So you had a bit of variety in the starting lineup. I like the fact that they could pivot to the second unit where Scotty ran the backup point for that group.
Yeah, me too, and he wants that too.
So I don't really think that I'd necessarily want to bring in a backup point guard who consistently is in the rotation that takes away those minutes from Scotty. Having said that, though, I think there probably needs to be some depth on the roster with backup point guard, because otherwise you do see this like disorganized style of play, and I think that you should be three deep at every position regardless, especially at guard. So, yeah, I mean, Javon, it's a big, big, big moment here for him, because he's going to get as much time as he probably could have possibly asked for coming into this year. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he's got to show us more than what he's doing right now, though, because right now I'm seeing a lot of mistakes in terms of the playmaking.
There is.
And you can excuse that for sure, because it's like he's just got here. He's been with the programs in Summer League, but he's not in the rotation in the same way.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, some of them are just like he's driving into traffic with no plan, or he's not really setting guys up. There's not that many plays. He's actually done a better job scoring, whether that's on the break, whether that's even catch and shoot threes, things like that. But that'll be a little bit more secondary to what you expect from the point guard, which is to like really organize, set, and just like control the game to a degree that, you know, I mean, it's not even remotely close to what Scotty or Quickly is
doing. No.
Yeah.
Not right now. But there are like some really nice stampede cuts. And what I like about what he offers is that there is like the multiple levels of scoring, which I do like, but his instincts, decision-making is a bit up and down. I'm not going to, you know, hide from that. That's definitely there. But there's a natural flow to his game that I really enjoy. And also,
what do you mean by that? What do you mean by that?
The way he dribbles, the way he moves, the way he stampedes, as I mentioned, when he gets the ball and he's driving towards the basket. Like, there's been some missed layups over the past few games that, you know, similar to Bruce Brown, a lot of missed layups between those two. But if he's able to, like, you know, get kind of a better handle on that, get a little stronger, finish around the rim a little bit better, like, 2 points can become six pretty quickly because of how fast he is, and also the way he accelerates. And that's, like, a huge part of what Darko wants from his guards is how fast can you get from point A to point B? Right.
Okay.
And that's no different than like an RJ Barrett. He's very good at that. That's why he's excelling in this system. And IQ's good at that too. And Javon, like, he might be like one of the fastest players on the team right now. And with the ball, I do trust his ball handling a little bit more than probably Bruce Brown. But also the way he's able to get from point A to point B with the ball stably. I think there's something there, and he's willing to fight. And with my conversation that I had with him going into the season, I like his motivation. I like his purpose. And I think he believes he's going to make it. So
what were some, just before we go to break, like what is that motivation? What was the purpose?
To make it, right? And when he was signed from the Raptors, like, there was a lot of Bulls fans that were just like, no, not Javon.
Right,
he's our local guy too, but they also believed in what he's going to be. And I mean, it's hard to say like what a player's motivation is, but like, why is it that, you know, when you're talking to Danny or when we're talking to CJ, and he was just like, I didn't have to tell Fred, Pascal, OG, Yak, anything. They were just doing it. Mm. They were just in the gym before everyone because they wanted it that badly. Javon is like that to me.
Okay. All right. You know what? Honestly, I'm looking forward to seeing more and more of it because to be fair, it's like, you can see it at the G League level, and I saw obviously plenty of him. If you watch any 905, you saw a lot of Javon. And before he came out to the Raptors, he did hit back-to-back game winners, which was quite nice.
Beautiful.
But ultimately, I think what he does at this level, especially in the last like month of the season, is going to be so important
for
him. So I'll be keeping an eye on it. Ochai, I think you could safely say, is going to be in the rotation. So
yeah,
I mean, these are the kind of little sort of margins to watch for. But at least I like to think that the Raptors roster is mostly set. You know what I mean? Like it's reached 28 players who have hit the court, as we talked about with the quiz.
Yeah.
And hopefully it doesn't get to 30, because I actually would like to sit down and kind of invest and like really get to know some of the guys and what they can do. So that's what we're watching for tonight against the Pistons. But we'll come back to the Pistons game a little bit later on after this break. I've been your host, Willow. You've been listening to The Raptor Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network, brought to you by Campbell's new Chunky Spicy Soup.
Diving deep into Leafs, Raptors, Jays, and NFL. The JD Bunkus Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We'll be right back.
Welcome back to the Raptors Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network. I'm your host, Slay Malou. I'm continuing to be joined by producer co-host Amin Mon. We have joining us from the road, Savannah Hamilton. I hope the weather's good in Detroit as well, because it's 18 over here.
Yeah, it's about the same. I think it's actually 20 over here, so not to brag. Wow. Got the upper hand.
Okay, all right. All right, I'm going to take that
This lighting
back.
In your hotel room is pretty good, so obviously it's very sunny over there.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, it helps.
You got a glow to you right now.
Wow, okay.
Good stuff.
Thank you.
Yeah, nice. Yeah. We set it off really nicely. So before doing the show, I actually realized that Scotty Barnes did a shoot-around this morning and spoke a shoot-around, and we've seen Scotty obviously traveling with the team. We've also seen him post a really gnarly photo of his hand with the cast removed, and it kind of looked like Mr. Krabs' claw and how swollen it was. Obviously, he had surgery. It just was gnarly.
Surgical glove when you just inflate it? That was my thinking.
Yeah.
Blow into it?
Basically, yeah. This is a very similar visual. But, Seb, how did Scotty look and how did he sound about, the injury and just the team outlook in general?
Yeah, I mean, Scotty is Scotty. I think that just wraps it up right there, to be quite honest. He was, optimistic, positive. Mm-hmm. I didn't get any sense of, negativity or any type of emotion like that. He was really proud of his teammates. Mm. He actually went through them almost like one by one, shouting out exactly which one was doing well.
Wow.
In terms of like what they were doing well, like he's like, shout out Grady, shout out Freeman Liberty, shout out this, like he was going through all of them at the end of the press conference there. In terms of like, his own timeline, he gave us an update that, it's just not definitive. It's still too early to tell right now. He did say that he really wants to be back out there. And like, knowing Scotty and how much we all know he loves the game of basketball, he makes that very, very clear. You could tell that he definitely wants to be back, but he's also happy with supporting his teammates right now. And he likes what he sees right now, too.
Maybe I'll ask both of you this, but should Scotty come back this season?
I don't see a reason why. I think there's more value. I mean, I was talking about earlier on when I thought there was a chance for the plan. Like, there's value in them trying to get that experience. But at this point, for him to hustle hard to try and get back for, what, 3-4 games when, look, like, the season is, like, it's kind of gone now. We're not making the play-in tournament, so why not invest that time into some other players, especially when we're seeing some of them kind of pop, like IQ, RJ, and Grady. They're doing a lot with these minutes, and it's been fun to watch.
Okay, Sav, I'll put the same question to you. Should Scotty try to push really hard to come back this season?
You know, we're under 20 games now, right, the season left.
Thankfully.
I think at this point, like, the picture has been set out, nothing's official.
Yeah.
But when you are where you are in the standings, I think at this point you are curious to see who else you have on the roster that you're going to be building with Scotty come off season. And I think that it's kind of like a blessing in disguise in the fact that these guys have been able to kind of showcase more range in their game. I know that like the case with Grady, his passing ability, same thing with RJ. I think that's been like honestly so great to see, and I think it's just like promising. So I mean, the blunt answer is I don't think it's worth it, because even if he does come back, it's gonna be like for 3 games, maybe, like probably not worth it by then. So, but if he loves basketball, then it's probably nothing gonna stop him if he can.
Okay. Well, in the meantime, as you mentioned, RJ, Emmanuel Quickly, these guys have really taking some of these opportunities, had some really good games. Unfortunately, they've not been able to, like, close the deal and win it. But, like, that's honestly, let's be honest, that's secondary, right? We're seeing, what, the 21-9-18 game from Emmanuel.
Yeah.
We just saw 26-7-9 from RJ Barrett as well. Savannah, how important have these moments been for those two guys to have turns essentially leading the team in this road trip?
Absolutely. It really does showcase, like, not just to Scotty, but to everybody within the organization, exactly what they have on their hands. I think we knew coming into it, like, what RJ and IQ could bring, and we had a good idea. But now that when they moved, especially IQ, to the starting lineup when he first came to Toronto, we knew that, like, okay, this is his opportunity to kind of take a bigger role. And now, especially with Scotty out, we're seeing him take even another step. Mm. And kind of, like, they're trying really hard to, you know, play within their role, but at the same time, understand that more is needed from them. So they're almost like emphasizing or exaggerating what they're doing. And so as a result, we're like, wow, these guys are so productive. We're seeing outstanding performances, like the stat lines that you were just dropping there from not just them, but like the other guys too, stepping up. And so I think it's just like, it's a really promising sign going into the future, because now we could think about next season already and like what preseason could look like if these guys have a chance to merge and like have their game built up to the way that they have it, and also just build confidence with the rest of the group. Like, that's another thing that you know, this team needs a lot more time with each other, and it's going to change once the dynamics and everyone's back and healthy, of course. But like, even just getting to know this group on the court is going to be just instrumental, because guess what, next year probably most likely there's going to be injuries at some point as well, and it's going to be who's going to step up into that role. And I think that's exactly what we're seeing right now, is just some glimpses of that.
Savannah, in a lead like number one option role, which is what RJ and kind of IQ are dealing with right now with Scotty out and also Jakubertl, like a few starters are gone. What changes for a player in terms of the defenses that they see, the reps that they get, compared to what they were doing when Scotty and at least the Raptors were healthy? Like, how are things changing for IQ and RJ with the way that they're being defended compared to previous?
Oh, yeah, they're drawing way more attention on the court than, you know, they ever have, probably, because when Scotty's out there, like, that's the guy that you need to stop in order to kind of like slow down the Raptors collectively. But with those two now like being the center of focus, especially with RJ seeing a bit more different coverages, like not just one coverage in particular, we're seeing multiple. I think it's one invaluable experience for him. I'm sure he saw something similar with his role in New York, but like I said, like, it's just emphasized now. It's different when you are the second or third option versus the number one option now. And so I think they've been like kind of taking the pressure head on and like performing like honestly above expectations, if you really wanted to like call it out.
Yeah.
All things considered, like, they're putting up these numbers against guys that when now they are the center of the scouting report. And so, yeah, I think for sure their roles have definitely expanded. But like I said, like, it's not like they're doing too much. It's not like you're saying like, oh, what are you doing? Like, or that's like so outside your role. Like, no, they're just playing hard. They're rebounding. They're like making the extra pass, which is something that Darko has always preached. They're just, I think it's just a level of extra intention when doing all of it. So yeah, I mean, I love what I'm seeing from both of them.
Mm-hmm. You that's the number one reason to tune in. Whichever guy's available, hopefully both guys are available. And what, tonight RJ is out with a personal reason, and quickly, I believe, is questionable.
Yes.
So hopefully one of them's available tonight to see. But, you know, it was interesting to me because it's also, you get to know a little bit more of their mindset. And quickly was asked about, you know, the 18 assists, the that game in Phoenix when they lost. And I think he was like, I would have rather had a win or something like that. And I do want to know, especially because you're around the team a lot, like, how has the losing, especially some of these close games, has that affected them? Like, do you notice that? Or is it, like, not the same kind of drain and pull maybe with the older teams that we had the last two seasons?
I don't think any of them are satisfied with losing, but I think all of them understand the context and the bigger picture. And I think that's a testament to kind of, to what Coach Darko Rajakovic has been preaching. And I also think they understand the fact that, like, these guys have just collectively gotten together within the past month. Mm-hmm. So, like, how much expectations can you put on a team that's basically the same way that teams come together in preseason? They're in that stage right now. So if you're really comparing apples to apples, like, they're basically in like November shape form. And so I think they understand that, and they're going up against literally like the last game was against like the NBA champions. And so they have that context in mind, but I think like them showing each other that they're willing to fight for one another is absolutely keeping, I don't know, the vibes up. Or just like they're just showing each other that they care.
Yeah, because you know what I mean, right? Because the last couple of seasons, like when the previous group lost, you could tell. And this group,
it was like a weight. There was like a weight in
exactly.
the room. This is like not the same energy. This is not like, there's no heaviness to it. It's more like, how can we learn from this?
Okay, good.
Well, have you seen any difference in Darko's demeanor? I mean, it's four straight losses, some worse than others. But post-game, when he gets up there, gets ready for the mic, is he exasperated? What's he feeling like? Is it the exact same kind of instincts feel?
It's the same thing that it's kind of been all season. That's like a credit to him. He's been very consistent with that.
Yeah.
With the exception of Scotty Barnes is an all-star rant, which is might be a one-off.
That was his 50-point game for the season. Yeah,
seriously,
it is his 50-pointer. But yeah, other than that, like, you know, he's actually been really consistent. Like, he's by nature, you could tell he's just like a really positive guy. Like, yeah. So even through these losses, you know, he's very detailed in breaking it down and how they lost the game. He'll, you know, obviously point out the positives, but then also dive deep into what they need to improve on and work on. And he also knows, like, he's been preaching it from, like, literally from the start of the season to work on the fundamentals. And so I think he's just, like, seeing the fundamentals being executed in the games is kind of what he's looking for. So I think that, like, when you have a goal, when you have targets, both individually and collectively as a team, it's almost like, are you getting closer to that goal rather than, like, the final results of winning and losing? So it's not like you're weighing it on an emotional balance of, like, oh, this really sucks. Like, of course, nobody wants to lose. Mm-hmm. But I think the win with this team is if they're seeing slow and steady progress. So yeah. I think, yeah, so that's what that's why I think, honestly, like, between coach and the team, like, just everybody's relatively positive still.
Have you heard the word tanking used at all?
No. Okay. Nobody has said the word tank.
Good, because I think that's an important distinction. Like, players and coaches don't tank.
No.
Organizations tank. Front offices kind of tank.
And they will tell you to maybe not play player X or player B, but the players,
that's
coach,
out of the coach's hands. That's out of the coach's hands, and that's definitely out of the player's
hands. They're trying to win. They're trying to win the game with the players that they have.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think that's the thing for me is, like, there is a – maybe you're just a recalibration on my own personal side, but just, like, how would you evaluate Darko's decision-making within games, right? Because I do feel like he's not trying to make moves in the games at all to spoil their chances of – like, not trying to lower his chance of winning within the game, right? But I feel like there are certain moves that don't really click or don't really pan out. Like, we saw, for example – I don't know if anyone asked him about this, but in the Portland game, Grady came out in overtime, and it was McDaniels who came in, and we saw Grady check back into the game. So there's clearly an intention to play Grady. It's just that he sat over 3 minutes. Like, those little decisions, maybe you can brush over all of them because you're like, okay, winning and losing is not the goal anymore. But to me, I'm like, I don't know. I still want to see, like, a definitive demonstration from the coach each game of, like, there is this, like, not just tactical acuity. I think he definitely clearly knows tactics, but he's making the right moves that push them closer towards winning within game. So I guess my question to you is, like, well, A, number one, why did Darko do that? And also B, like, how have you seen sort of Darko's impression on the team in terms of running the tactics with this group?
Yeah, I want to say that he did address that situation post game. And if I'm just going to Lulu because it's, like, you know, day whatever on the road, and he didn't, he has justified those types of those moves in the past, and he's very specific in what he's looking for usually within those lineups. And so I think, like, to what your point is, like, absolutely every single, like, game and every single play, I believe, like, Darko's intention is to win. Like, it's not like he's purposely taking out guys to sabotage. Like, just from my perspective, I have yet to see something completely out of this world that's like, why would you do that? Like, without reason.
Right.
Yeah. And if that's, like, kind of like a situation in Portland where, like, I don't know, maybe he was trying to go big or, like, see something different. Mm. I didn't understand it, to be quite honest myself, when like, I saw that happen as well. But like I said, like, he has always, whenever been asked those types of questions, like, always had a legitimate reason behind it.
Mm. As I bring it up here, he is a fan of the quick blow, right? Like, late in games, he wants to give a player a 2-3 minute break. And even earlier in the season, when the Raptors had their version one of the team, he would do stuff like that. Scotty goes out at the 5 minute mark. He comes back at the 2 minute mark because a few plays go by. He's not able to get him in. And then all of a sudden,
that was a Celtics game, and that was a 1 or 2 possession game.
Yeah. And he's done that. So he's done that before. And I'm looking at the minutes of Grady here. I'm trying to find them here as we're talking. But I wonder if something like that is the reason why he would do that. That maybe it's like a string of 12 minutes for Grady, and he's like, he played 39 that game.
I'm not saying he didn't play enough minutes. First off, the reason he got himself
too many
stuck.
Minutes.
No, the reason he got himself stuck in that opportunity is because he flipped the starting lineup. So he had Grady come off for Javon to start that game, or in the third quarter, even though Grady started that game. And then that, because he came off the bench, now there was nobody to spell him. And they were making a comeback. And now they're like, oh, wow, we played him a lot of minutes in a row. Now we have to spell him in overtime. And that wasn't the winning and loss. Like, that didn't lead to the win and loss, to be very clear. Like, that one substitution. But it was like, I don't know if you could have done that backwards. Like, you probably would have started Grady for the third quarter. That way you can give him a regular break. And then that way you can play him for as much as you need in closer games down the stretch.
Is this losses and lessons right here?
No, I just mean like, what lessons can you take out of a loss on the coach as well? Because I still want to see that. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like I think that even if you lose, like there's always the things you can take away. Like there's just like, in, you know, quickly can have like 18 assists and a loss. You could clearly say he did so much and it was like, you know, the circumstances weren't great for him. I want to see that from Darko as well.
Sure.
That's all.
Actually, a question for both of you, because this has been a topic for us. You mentioned it yesterday with JD. It's like, how do we evaluate Darko, right? And for me, it's like, I think we have to look at the development of the players that are in the rotation right now, right? Yeah. And so Grady, Emmanuel Quickley, I'm looking at Javon Freeman Liberty, I'm looking at RJ. Are they making steps in this last stretch of the season? Because you're right, the substitutions, the rotations, everything's off right now. So players are being inserted, even though they're kind of like, may not fit, but we just want to give him some playing time. Mm. So how else can we look at what Darko is doing and his decision-making? And this is how we got to do it. It's like, how are the players getting better? And I think we are seeing some strides done from RJ.
Oh, absolutely.
Quickly, and of course,
developmentally, he's done a great job. And that was the main reason he was brought in.
Yeah.
But what do you see? Like, day-to-day, what's Darko's process like? Everyone always talks about he goes, spends so much time individually with the players. Is that what you're seeing up close?
Well, day-to-day, I believe he wakes up and the first thing he grabs in is espresso shot. And then that
these
gets
days
the
it's five.
And by the time shoot around comes around, he's on number five and he's rebounding and hustling and closing out on players and he's sweating up a storm usually. I've seen him very active out there, like the way that the assistant coaches will like hustle with the players. Mm-hmm. Like I've seen him like give that much attention to the guys as well.
That's great.
Maybe not all, like not every single time.
Dude, but
I've seen
him do closeout drills again with Marquise Noel and contesting Marquise Noel shots.
Did he block him?
Yeah.
Okay, don't be rude.
I'm sorry.
Yo, he was so messy. He asked, did he block him? Yo, that's wild.
Sorry.
Amit.
Sorry, my bad.
I've never seen an assistant coach block a player's shot in closeout drills.
Jamal?
I mean,
No.
Closeout drills.
When they're playing one-on-one, that's different. But we're just talking about hand in the face, closeout drill. You should not be blocking the player's shot. Like,
close your left hand. Yeah. It's more effective.
Anyway,
I mean, this team has some tall assistant coaches and some former players. So if they did get a block shot on some of the guys, I can't blame them. But no, I think you touched it, Will. Like, Darko was brought in for his development.
Yeah.
Like, he is a development first coach. And so I think that's exactly what we're seeing this season. And we could argue, like, everybody, honestly, like, has taken a step. Scotty took a big step. And so it's hard to, you know, point out anything. Like, and that's why, like, to evaluate him fairly, it's tough right now. Like, you could say, like, some certain in-game decisions you question for sure. You could do that with any coach.
Mm-hmm.
But with him in particular, he has had to relearn his team like 17 times this season.
Yeah, Savannah, we opened today's show with a quiz of
literally,
can you name all 28 players who have taken the core for the Raptors this year?
I was a few short.
I think Amit missed only two guys, and one of them was Kyra Lewis Jr. Remember him? Yeah.
He even played? I wouldn't even
know. Yeah, he played 2 minutes. He played two. I only knew that because of basketball reference. Yeah, that's a basketball reference. Hey, last thing, Savannah, we got a minute here. So I think the only thing with the wins and losses thing is we don't get as many walk-offs, you know, because to take players behind the people behind the scenes, you only get the walk-off when they win, right? There's very, very rare instances if you get a walk-off with a loss. So over-under for you, Savannah, on walk-off interviews for the rest of the season, I'm going to put it at 3.5 to be nice.
Okay, well, I got to look at the rest of the season schedule. I take it day by day right now.
So does Darko.
Exactly.
Yeah. 3.5. Don't avoid the question. Over under. A walk-off interview with Savannah Hamilton on Sportsnet.
How many Sportsnet games are left?
Let's just say 50-50, so like probably like 10, maybe 9. Yeah.
We got Orlando in Orlando. Mm. I'm going to say we'll win that one. We're going to win that one because we already see them once. And so it's hard to beat a team twice. Mm. So it's, so once, that's a walk-off. After that, I'm not sure who we play, like off the top of my head.
Yeah.
So I'm going to say, I'm going to be
not pretty
and say like,
it's not pretty.
Four.
Yeah. Next time you come on, I'm going to give you the stats on how many times you've done walk-offs this year. And the number might shock you. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, for some reason, you know what? It feels like it's more than last year.
You
because
know what?
They kept on winning.
Yes. Last year, they did have a big disparity.
Sports game.
Yeah. It was rude how they did that.
March 23rd against the Wizards. That could be one coming up.
Yeah, Savannah, put on your best outfit for that one. But we're going to let you go. Enjoy the game tonight. And we're going to take another break here. I've been your host, Willie. You've been listening to The Raptor Show, The Messy Raptor Show, on the Sportsnet Radio Network, brought to you by Campbell's new Chunky Spicy Soup.
The best Blue Jays show out there, period. Blair and Barker. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to The Raptor Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network. I'm your host, Wayne Liu. It's Wednesday, and Manchester City is not playing Champions League right now. So we do have Mark Stein on the line. Mark, are you still in Manchester? Are you back stateside now?
I've been back since Monday afternoon, undergoing the very difficult readjustment process to the United States, leaving Blue Heaven behind. It is not easy, my friend, but I will go into an NBA game tonight, Warriors at Mavs. So yeah. I think by night's end, I'll be close to back to normal.
You know, Mark, speaking of not easy, it was not easy to see Jeremy Duck, who put his studs right into Alexis McAllister's chest and not be awarded a penalty that could have potentially decided the title race.
McAllister played for that. He crowded his face.
Absolutely.
No, I'm
totally in agreement with you. I think Salah actually had a dive right before that, too. And I was like, Salah very rarely dives. So you could tell that Liverpool really, really wanted to push that one over the line. But a riveting match over the weekend, 1-1 draw, and potentially the last.
Let me just tell you this. I could not make my way to Anfield in almost 30 years of going to England. It was the toughest ticket I've ever encountered. Not surprising, because the game had so much riding on it, but just
of course
watch that one. I went to two City matches, two other matches, but had to do that one on TV because it was impossible to get into Anfield.
You couldn't call up a Liverpool minority owner, LeBron James, maybe for some tickets, you know?
No. And well, here's the thing. I do, you know, luckily enough, in my ESPN past, I got to work alongside Liverpool legend Steve McManaman, I could have called him, but I couldn't sit in the Liverpool section. I couldn't pretend.
Right.
So the problem is
the
Anfield's undergoing renovation. So the allocation of visiting fans even smaller than normal. So all good, man. Watched it on TV, had a blast.
Hey, likewise.
Had a beautiful final meal Sunday night, and reluctantly got on the plane very early Monday morning.
First off, you can follow all of Mark's travels if you subscribe to the Steinline, which you absolutely should on Substack, where he actually detailed some of these exact moments that he's talking about. But if you go to the other ones that he's written recently, you wrote about the state of league scoring, to bring it back to basketball, where you mentioned that, interesting enough, scoring is down post All-Star break. And it's down by like a not insubstantial margin. Now, it doesn't seem that big, but it's like, well, at least scoring less like 4 or 5 points on average. But when you're talking about the whole league as a whole and the scores are down like that, at least to me, when I first approached this piece and I saw that stat, I'm thinking this has to be intentional. But I want to put it to you, Mark. How much is the scoring down, and sort of what are the factors behind this?
Well, look, I can tell you what, there are certainly players and coaches and league executives out there who believe that the game is being officiated differently since the All-Star break. And the numbers that I printed Tuesday, so this was through Monday's games, scoring at the break was, the league-wide average was 115.5. And that's the highest league-wide scoring average at the All-Star break since 1969-70. Since the All-Star break, this was, again, through Monday night's games, entering Tuesday's play. So this is a sample size of 147 games. Mm-hmm. League-wide scoring was down to 111.7 points per game. So nearly a drop of 4 points per game. Like you said, that's yep. not an insignificant drop. And what a lot of people are pointing to is the league-wide free throw average at the All-Star break was 22.7 free throws per game. That was league average. And that was down since the break, entering Tuesday's play, down to 19.9. So a drop of 3 free throws per game. So what all that means, the takeaway from all those numbers, there has been a behind-the-scenes chatter from teams who believe that the game is being called differently. Mm-hmm. So now I'm catching wind of this from 5,000 miles away while I'm in soccer country. So I'm not seeing a lot of these games with my own eyes. Yeah. I left on March 1st and got back Monday night. So I've pretty much, I've seen very little NBA basketball with my own eyes since March, but I reached out to the league office myself and asked them, and a league spokesman told me there has been no directive to referees to call the game any differently. So there are obviously, I think, some teams, coaches, players, executives who would take issue with that. I don't know if they're going to do it publicly, probably not. Mm-hmm. But all of this, I guess, bears examination and something that we need to monitor. And I just think, you know, it's something that will continue to be talked about and looked at for the rest of the season. And look, all of this stems from the fact that the league, you know, in January, we had that run, late January, early February, we had that run where 5 guys scored 60-plus points.
Yeah, right.
And it brought a lot of criticism to the league rather than praise. Mm. People are saying that it's too easy for the offense. The game has skewed too far to the advantage of offensive players. And so, you know, all of this kind of factors into that.
I do wonder how much the All-Star game factors into this too. It's a point you brought up, and I thought it was a really astute one, but it's such a big showcase, right? The way the league operates is like football obviously is going to dominate. NFL is going to dominate. Super Bowl is going to happen. And then guess what? Next weekend, it's All-Star weekend. It's time to focus on basketball. We see more basketball games on like ABC and these like bigger networks, you know, like General Cable, all that kind of stuff. And that pivot point for the All-Star game, the big takeaway for me, if I was a casual sports fan, like the average person, which is typically speaking what they're targeting, because they're definitely not targeting me and you, Steve. We're going to be covering and we're going to be watching NBA no matter what until our last breath. But like the casual fan, they're like, okay, let's tune in to see what basketball's about, what are the storylines. And the one thing that they saw was 211 points. And all the conversation, and honestly, even to a novice fan, was like, this is way too easy, even for an All-Star game. And I guess, you know, it would stand to reason that the league would want to push back on that perception on such a big scale. So I do wonder if, you know, if you think that that had a part to play, just how much the inflated scores took place at the All-Star game.
Yeah, and look, I actually think it shouldn't. I think it does. I think you're right. To me, the All-Star game is a completely separate thing. And I wrote a big piece, long piece on that subject afterwards. Just like, I do not get outraged about the All-Star game. To me, the modern All-Star game has lost its utility completely. Right. And I think the NBA could learn a lot from the NHL, which invites 44 players to its All-Star game. Now, maybe that's too many All-Stars, but for people who complain like me, who think 24 All-Stars in a 30-team league is too few, but the NHL, 44 All-Stars divide into 4 teams of 11. They play 3-on-3. They've gone completely away from traditional All-Star competition. And I think, you know, like the NBA took way too much criticism for how bad the All-Star game was, because the All-Star weekend is a convention now. The game is obviously what's on Sunday night, but it's just, you're not going to get a competitive All-Star game. If God forbid somebody gets hurt in an All-Star game trying to, quote, play hard or play defense, the noise and outrage will be 25 times worse. But that's all my opinion. I think you're right. I think the league did take a lot of heat for how unwatchable the All-Star game was, and that has factored into this. And look, LeBron James himself said this is what a lot of regular season games look like. I think that's hyperbole. I think he took it too far. But
Well, we've seen some of those games. There was a game earlier this year, and it's very, very prominent in my mind. There's a game this year where the Hawks scored over 150 and they lost with no overtime. You know?
Yeah. And a lot of people would say, look, the league, what Joe Dumars has repeatedly said publicly is, and Joe Dumars is now the head of basketball operations for the NBA. What Joe Dumars has repeatedly said is, we don't care what the score is, we just want it to be competitive.
Sure.
And I think that the All-Star game was certainly a bazillion miles away from competitive. Mm-hmm. But the competition committee has already been discussing this at multiple sessions now about, do they need to restore some of the contact freedoms that defenders used to have to give defenders more of a fighting chance against these offensive geniuses who not only can score in a zillion different ways, but can do it from 30, 35 feet away and space the floor like never before. So this is going to be a big off-season discussion, I think. But look, the reason this is such a hot-button thing now is because the rules can't change in the middle of the season. That's right. Going to upset everyone. That's going to mess with the integrity of the competition. So, you know, that's why I think, you know, this discussion has been so heated here in the last week or so.
Yeah, I do wonder if Tom Thibodeau is as part of the competition committee, because if he is, I think he could fix NBA defenses. I mean, the Knicks' last three opponents have scored 74. 79 and 79 points. So, yeah.
And you know, that's a great point that you make there, because, like, you know, you have to give the coaches some credit at, you know, sometimes too. Like, you know, the refereeing couldn't have drastically changed to such a degree that now the Knicks can hold teams to 80. Certainly the Knicks defense, their players and coaches have, they're a factor here.
Mm-hmm. For sure. I think that's the thing. It's like you would like to see at least that process and effort put into it. Because, again, it doesn't necessarily mind – or I don't necessarily mind if it's like a high-scoring game. In fact, a lot of high-scoring games are very entertaining. Raptors just played Denver, for example. They lost 125 to 119. It's a high score, but it was very entertaining throughout because both teams are able to execute. And even though there was a factor of defense being played, you know, I think almost the point of defense to me is like to make the offense even more satisfying, right? To offer a bigger resistance. But ultimately, I think everyone in the back of my minds, I think most people really, unless you're Tom Thibodeau, I guess, who would like to see the offense end up winning just in a more notable way. But yeah, I mean, I'm curious to think, like, Mark, do you have any suggestions in terms of, like, you know, anything that should be changed rules wise that, you know, the competition committee can consider and also potentially implement to sort of make, again, just defenses more effective so that offense is going to look even better as a result of it?
Well, look, there are drastic suggestions out there that I think are too far, like take away the corner three. I don't even know how you would do that. Like, that one is just too much.
Yeah.
Then you'll hear people say, take out defensive 3 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
But
that's only going to lead to more jump shots. I hope people are aware of that.
I don't like those. To me, those are too extreme. I don't think you're going to see that.
Okay.
But next season, will more contact be allowed? I suspect yes. Maybe my basketball brain isn't sufficiently developed to explain it well. But I just think they're gonna find a way to let more contact go next season, because, you know, Steve Kerr has been the one who has said it publicly many, many times, but he is certainly not alone. There is just a feeling among coaches. Well, you know, actually, Rick Carlisle, I do a weekly radio show in Dallas every Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
And Rick Carlisle came on my show, and I was kind of giving him a hard time, like, man, you know, since you left Dallas, you become Doug Moe. You're just letting it rip. And the Pacers, you know, the Pacers, I mean, they're the most freewheeling team in the league.
Mm-hmm.
And Rick Carlisle said, I don't even know what NBA defense is anymore.
Yeah, that's wild.
And so there's a lot of coaches, I think, who feel that way. And so exactly how they're going to do it, I'm not sure. But I just think there will be more contact allowed next season.
Yeah, and I think maybe as a general principle, and then this is hopefully the case, not even just like, you know, with basketball, but maybe in just the sports in general, especially contact sports, it's like there is inevitable. You want contact. There's going to be inevitable moments of contact when people compete in these type of sports. It's just when two players beat each other to the spot, that should be a draw or even maybe even slight advantage to the defense, rather than when two players meet and get to the same spot, the advantage is always given to the offense. And I feel like more and more that is what's happened in the league, is like draws go to the offense, not to the defense, in which case I think that that's where it gets, you know, out of balance, where you see some of these cheaper calls or guys just trying to contain and guard on the perimeter without hand checking, but like, you know, sliding and stuff like that, and that's still called as a foul. Then it's like, what do you really want them to do? But you know, I, again, because we saw Jokic here in Toronto or playing against Toronto, I wanted to ask you, is Jokic, I guess my question, and I had it yesterday on the show as well, but if Jokic wins MVP again, which right now he is the favorite, he would have three MVPs to his name, not including the finals MVP. There have only been 9 other 3-time MVP winners in NBA history. Is that a factor for you, Mark? I know you don't necessarily vote on it, but is that going to be a factor for other people that you've spoken to with votes? Because, you know, he will be joining a list that literally includes 10 players all time if he won MVP again this year, which he absolutely deserves to win this year.
It's funny. Had I been voting, I would have never even looked that up. Like, I would not have known that unless you told me. So,
okay.
So in my voting brain, which, again, I have not officially voted since 2017, so this will be year 7 that I have recused myself from it, but I still put out my ballot every year. This is how I voted, and I promise you, I wouldn't have even have looked that up. That, to me,
that's good. I like
is
that.
Not – for me, again, this is only me, that is not – a consideration. To me, the MVP is a year by year. We only judge. I don't, and that's it. Like, you hear people say about Tatum, they're holding past playoff failures against Tatum. Why? That has nothing to do with this season's MVP.
Sure.
This season's MVP is who is the best player from October 24th to April 14th, or at least that is the way that I always interpreted it. And look, you know, now that you bring that up, Jokic to me is more than worthy. I can probably guess some of the names on that list. I don't probably don't know all 9.
Yeah.
But Jokic is in this current, in today's NBA, he is the equivalent of, he's as good as Bird and Magic were.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he's the dominant force of today. He is.
Yeah.
He is a singular force that every team, especially in the West, how are we going to win the West? How are we going to deal with Jokic? That is the question every team asks itself.
Yeah. Well, I think maybe going back to even when you did vote it, like, when did it stop being that, like, LeBron's the MVP? You know what I mean? Like, because I feel like when I look at this list, I'm like, 4 for LeBron, which, honestly, there were more than 4 seasons to me where LeBron was, like, the most impactful or most valuable to me. I mean, we can break it down year by year, and there's certain other cases, but it did feel very much like, all right, he's got enough, like, let's pivot in a different direction. Is that also how you felt in the moment,
I'm not going to sit here and I can't sit here and pretend that voter fatigue doesn't exist. Like,
right,
I said,
that's what I'm talking about.
In my little universe, I want to believe that I approached it every year that I did vote for MVP. I want to believe that I approached it with ultimate objectivity. And again, that I was purely judging you for the 180th days of that regular season and how you did in the playoffs in the past. And, you know, that was not a factor. But does it happen that voters just say, you know what, I'm sick of voting for this guy and I want to vote for this other guy? Of course that happens. I mean, we would be foolish to pretend otherwise. But, you know, I think LeBron probably fell victim to some of, I think the last time we talked about this, you know, like Jordan, you know, you could have just handed Jordan MVP on opening night most of the years he played if you just wanted to go by best player.
Yeah.
But
yeah, that's true. Yeah.
I don't think that's how you should do it.
Well, okay, on this subject, because this is in Dallas and it's close to you, like, I do wonder, like, I think coming into the year, maybe Luka was the MVP, like, betting favorite at least. And, I mean, who knows? There's so many good players in this league. But Luka certainly is one of those guys that will continue to be, and he's on, you know, the younger upswing. I think he just finally turned 25. Looked at the game. The headlines last night were quite hilarious. So, Mavs win, but Luka's run of 30-point triple-double ends, and the tagline is Dallas star finishes with 27 points, 14 assists, and 12 rebounds, falling just shy of a seventh straight 30-point triple-double. I guess my question when I see an absurd thing like that is just, what's it going to take for Luka to eventually get an MVP?
It is absurd. I mean, he just averaged 30 and he's averaged 30 and 10 for three straight months. And the last player to do that, to average 30 points and 10 assists in three months, mm-hmm. Tiny Archibald did it in like 1972. You know, it's just, right. I mean, it's insane. But look, he's going to be punished because of the Mavericks record. I mean, realistically, if the Mavericks don't win 50, it's going to be really hard for him to get there. But when you really dig into it and look at how many injuries the Mavericks have had, they're, I think, in the top five, maybe even the top three in terms of starting lineups this season because they've had so many injuries. Before the trade deadline, you know, he was playing with such a weak cast around him that there's no way that could have been a 50-win team as good as he is. Mm. But that is why he is getting punished in the MVP race, and that's just, you know, the way it's been for a long, long time. And people could say, well, the year Westbrook won and the first time Jokic won, they were on sub-50-win teams.
Yeah.
You know, but it's always circumstantial. Like, you know, I voted for Westbrook the year he won. And again, I will not apologize for that pick. I felt like not just because he averaged a triple-double and it was the first time since Oscar Robertson, but that Thunder team had just lost Durant.
Yep.
And they were supposed to win 37 games, not 47. So they were close enough to 50 for me that I voted for Westbrook. But, yeah, I mean, Luka does have a reason to feel like, man, this just ain't fair. Mm. But also we know sports and life are often not fair. So.
Yeah, no, because if I'm Luka, I'm like, all right, I lead the league in scoring 34.6 points per game. I lead the league in scoring in an era where scoring is high and everything like that. We just talked about it, but 34.6 is still 34.6. I average 9 rebounds. I average 10 assists per game. I got 1.5 steals, and I'm doing everything I can. And, yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's going to be tough because I think going into next year, it's like I don't really see Jokic not winning it again because he's 29, or he'll be 30 next year. His whole group is really, really solid, really strong. They're going to be great. Denver's always got a great record. And, you know, of course, you can always throw in, like, the potential of an injury. But realistically, he's been very, very healthy, and knock on wood for that, because we always want to see him perform. But it's like, he should probably cruise to another fourth one next year. It's just so hard to join this conversation, as it should be.
Really. It's MVP, you know? We can't forget that Shea, because the Thunder have a shot to win the West, mm-hmm. you know, that is such a glossy achievement in a really tough conference after no one projected Oklahoma City to win the West. So if the Thunder get the first seed, it's going to be really interesting to see how that impacts voters. I think Jokic is the favorite right now by 1-2-3. The projected 1-2-3 at this point, I think, would be Jokic, Shea, Luka, Giannis 4, maybe Tatum 5. I think that's a fairly safe projection at this point. But if the Thunder win the West, or if the Mavs finish on a tear and get to 50 wins, it's going to be really interesting.
Yeah. I also do wonder where, again, some of these other names start to crop up here, because it's a very international list for sure. And everyone obviously looks at the States as being, you know, the standard for basketball, and rightfully so, like, you know, obviously the best players and stuff like that. But
can you name the last American to win MVP? Do you know that answer?
Off the top of my head, is it James Harden?
It is James Harden, 2018. Houston, James Harden.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. So it's like maybe Anthony Edwards joins this list. I mean, the way he played last night, 37 points. I mean, you could definitely project, but like, again, you got to do so much now to be in this conversation. And I'm just happy that there's so much talent in the league, because I think 3-4 years down the line, would it surprise anybody at all if Wemby was joining this list too? He just needs his team to win, and then he's instantly going to be in this race too. But Mark, we appreciate you. I guess
you're solo today. What happened?
What happened? I mean, honestly, you know, it's been a lot of rotating co-hosts. You know, I put out the stat to start the show that the Raptors have had 28 different players take the court and wear a Raptors uniform and play NBA minutes this year, it's nearing that number for Raptors show co-host today, or this season too. So,
hey, if Sportsnet wants to fly me in, I would love to be your pinch co-host. Fly me in for a week. Fly me in for a week. I'll be pinch co-host. Mm. I'll eat every day at Lawrence Market to keep the cost down.
Oh, yeah.
Mark,
man, you know the spots for sure. St. Lawrence Market is definitely where the only place really in Toronto you should go for fresh seafood. But in any case, appreciate you, Mark, and we'll call you next week.
All right, man. Be good.
Yeah. Just kidding, okay? Lots of places in Toronto serve fresh seafood. But, you know, it is kind of nice to just walk up to that counter at the very end, little fish mart, and get whatever you want fried. It's kind of cool experience if you haven't done it already. A little touristy, but, you know, hey, listen, that's fine. Anyway, we're going to take our last break of the day. I've been your host, Walu. You've been listening to The Raptors Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network, brought to you by Campbell's new Chunky Spicy Soup.
Breaking down the top stories in the NHL every day. The Jeff Merrick Show. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Raptors Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network. I'm your host, Wayne Lou. I'm it, man. Pop back downstairs to join us after talking to Mark Stein there.
Your boy, your soccer buddy.
That's my guy, honestly. I'm gonna add it to the bucket list. I gotta watch a match with Mark Stein. One of the true OGs
in
St.
Lawrence
game.
Market. he's dropping gems. Like, this man actually knows Toronto.
Yeah. No, it's one of the perks of the lifestyle is like you get to travel so much and get to know different places and I mean, for Mark, I mean, it's great. It's never lost on me, like, how cool it is that we get to talk to Mark every week. Like, Mark is, as far as basketball journalists go and everything like that, is he in the Hall of Fame? He might be in the Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame. Let me look that up as you give me your thoughts on just anything, really.
Well, mainly that he was a tennis reporter. I had no idea. When I was with you last week, I was going to ask him some random tennis questions. I didn't get to it because he was in Manchester City, and that was a beautiful conversation too. But the man's really well-traveled, and it seems like whatever he tries to pursue, he excels at it, and he makes it happen, and he reaches, like, this kind of level where he's one of the NBA insiders, one of the most credible ones. So, kudos to him.
Yeah, I've looked it up. Thank you for buying me those 30 seconds.
You're
there.
You're welcome.
On February 15, 2019, Mark Stein was named the 2019 winner of the Kurt Gowdy Media Award for Print Media by the Naismith Memorial Basketball Hall of Fame. Good for him, man. Damn.
Heavy praise.
Yeah. Okay, so tonight, we pivot back to the Raptors. We look back at this matchup tonight, Raptors playing the Pistons. We'll preview that game a little bit later on, but I want to look at the bigger picture because this is something where I was listening to the Hoop Collective with Wendy, with Tim Bontemps, with Tim McMahon, and they were noting the idea that, like, look, there's a lot of teams tanking this year, even though all that you ever hear about this draft is just how weak it is. Hmm. And I'm not saying that this is some conspiracy. They're hiding it. They're like, the draft is actually way better. Like, I don't know enough about this draft to even give any sort of opinion on that until I really, really pivot towards studying it to a more cursory degree. But, like, still, it is an interesting point because last year there was a generational talent in the NBA draft. His name is Victor Wembanyama. Everyone knew about him. Everyone saw him. He even came here to America to play in that Las Vegas match against the G League Ignite, him versus Scoot. That was one of the more memorable moments last year. And everyone sort of could see this, like, it's like in Toronto. Everyone could see the CN Tower, relatively speaking, if you're within downtown. Everyone could see Victor were in the NBA.
As the CN Tower, so yeah, makes sense.
You could see it coming in the horizon, right? This is the guy. And last year, when you looked at it, and especially from the Raptor fans, I know this is something that burned me a little bit, burned a lot of other people about it, but it's just like, there were certain teams last year that really pivoted hard towards the tank, right? When you look at it, for me, it was five teams. It was San Antonio at 22 wins, which wasn't the fewest, by the way, but 22 wins for San Antonio. In pivoting towards this midseason, they traded Jakobertl to the Raptors, and that's what, again, the whole conversation, we don't want to go back on this again. But even preparation for this, they traded Derek White as well, traded DeJounte Murray in the year before that too. So it's like there's a lot that went into the fact that they want 22 wins because they were specifically tanking for the player, which obviously is now going to be their franchise player for the next two decades. So happy for them. The Houston Rockets, 22 wins last year. You could say with a lot of these tanking teams, there might have just been plain bad or dysfunctional. 22 wins. the Rockets were clearly trying to tank as well. The Hornets at 27 wins. I mean, LaMelo got hurt. They're just playing bad. They're basically having the exact same season this year. Mm-hmm. Hornets are kind of just like an irrelevant franchise. They actually ultimately end up with the second pick. Detroit at 17 wins last year.
Yeah.
Just straight up bad. Cade was injured for a lot of the year too. So, you know, their circumstances are what they are, but they clearly were tanking and hoping for lottery balls as well. And then the one that has kind of lost on everybody a little bit was Portland, who finished with 33 wins, which doesn't typically look like an egregious tank job. But when you really break it down, they shut down Dame midway through the season. They were really, really trying to maximize their pick. I think their sales job to Dame at the time was like, we need to get a really high pick, then maybe we can flip that pick for help to get you, and we, you know, build. And then it's like, just kidding, we moved up, we won in the lottery to get to number three. We're going to let you go because we feel like we've drafted your replacement in Scoot Henderson, mm-hmm. playing the same position. And down the stretch of those games, I just remember the Portland from last year. Guys like Jenathan Williams or Jenathan Williams, but it's J E N A T H A N, Jenathan, for me at least. But yeah, like they played guys like that a lot. Their last game of the season, game 82, is one of the more memorable ones, not because of the scoreline, which is already bad enough. The Warriors won 157-101 in game 82 of Portland season. The starting lineup for that group: Skylar Mays, Kevin Knox, Jenathan Williams, Shaedon Sharpe. Finally, we recognize somebody. Trenton Watford, moving away now. Justin Manaya, John Butler, Jabari Walker, who is still on the team. So there's two guys at least still on the team. And Chance Comanche, who, if you recognize that name, it's because he actually got caught in a that was the random like G Leaguer who just like murdered somebody in Vegas earlier this year.
Oh.
Yes, he's actually been charged with first-degree murder. This is not, like, speculation or anything like that. In any case, that was the roster that they had, right? So they clearly pivoted towards a tank. So, really, that's five teams who, like, tanked hardcore, and that's a draft with Victor Wembanyama. This year, as it currently stands, there's seven for a draft that does not have Victor, does not have anything close to Victor. Mm-hmm. Nobody's even saying this guy's a guaranteed all-star. Everyone's like, at best, they can make all-star. You know what I mean? And in this year, Detroit is at 11 wins, who the Raptors will see tonight. Washington's at 11 wins, who the Raptors actually will see a couple more times the rest of the year. Charlotte, who the Raptors have seen quite a bit in the last month or so, 16 wins. Toronto at 23-42. We're one of the groups here. San Antonio is still at 14 wins. You know, I would consider them a bit of a tanking team too because of the fact that they limited, you know, Victor's minutes to start the year. They also played him in two big lineups, and we've seen how much better he's been at just being the center outright. And also, they played like Jeremy Sochan at point guard, who is not a point guard. You know what I mean? Like, if
Raptors, funky with it.
Yeah, it was more than funky. It was rotting. Portland is at 18 wins. They're just clearly they've pivoted. They traded Dame, and then Memphis. They've had a lot of terrible injury luck, and so they're at 23 games. One now, and they're clearly trying to tank as well. There's seven teams tanking this year, and the draft is worse than last year. So, Ahmed, after me speaking for 10 minutes, why do you think this is?
First off, I think it's a very interesting topic.
Yes.
Because I looked at, I went a little bit deeper. And so, since the play-in started, right? That was in the, the bubble year, right? That's when they started. And then after that, I think that's where you got to start looking at how this kind of all plays out, because there was more incentive for a team that's like finishing 12th or whatever to try and win more games, which should in turn, you know, kind of decrease the amount of teams that are essentially tanking. And that did happen. In that year, there were seven teams, including the Toronto Raptors, Cleveland, Orlando, Detroit, Houston, OKC. Some of the teams are going to keep on coming up, which is another point that some of them are just like poorly run franchises.
Oh, some people just stay at the bottom. That's why it's a little bit terrifying to do this, because you could, every year Detroit's tanking basically.
Seriously, right? And so, but then within that, then it kind of went the other way where a team like Sacramento, right, who was tanking probably in 21-22, the last team in the play-in tournament in that year was 14 games under 500. 14 games. That's crazy. That's a really bad team.
You should not even get a chance.
Exactly. But this is like them saying, okay, we want to try and make that another big market game, yada, 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 right? But then since that, the number has been around six or five or so. And again, common teams, Detroit's always in there. Portland's in there for a few seasons. So they're kind of in that realm of things. My theory on this is that for a little while, probably before the play-in tournament, all that happened is that there were a lot of teams that they were just like in a tier of their own, essentially, where they were way above everyone else. They were the teams that we felt are going to be the title contenders regardless. And usually that kind of worked out. We're talking the big three eras of that kind of stuff, right? But now, as the NBA has pivoted away from that, they're trying to increase parity. They're trying to incentivize players to re-sign with teams.
Yeah, they changed a lot of the cap rules. They've changed a lot of the money rules so that to the exact point where you're talking.
Exactly.
Yeah, the league has tried to do this, not just teams.
Which I like, actually. Right?
Okay, you like parity? Like, okay,
who's going to win the championship this year? I don't know. Right? That's
probably
important.
Probably Denver.
It may. Yeah. Conference final. Who's it going to be? I don't know.
Conference final. That's a great point, though.
Yeah, exactly. So then after that, now you actually have a higher caliber group of teams that are in that championship window where they feel like they can win a title.
Okay.
And they're, you know, they're investing essentially money into those teams. And so they're opening their wallets. Now, within that, when that happens, also sports science is better. Teams are much more business savvy. And so they're willing to pull the plug earlier on a season. We've seen OKC do that with Shea to ensure that their star player does not get significantly injured.
Okay.
Right? So they're going to pull the plug. We saw it with Dame as well. And also, well,
we can't ignore the fact that the general attitude and, I guess, culture of what's, like, acceptable in sports is, like, it's actually okay now to not play your players as much.
That's a problem.
It's a problem, but it's not a problem. But for a while, I'm just saying that, like, the overall culture did change more towards, like, it's cool if you want to rest, guys. Now it's shifted back to it's not cool.
Exactly.
Yeah, but.
Yeah. And so we circle all the way around is, like, as the league gets more competitive, teams are going to prioritize re-signing the players that they bring in. They draft. So whether or not it's a good draft or a bad draft, you have to, if you're a team like some of the ones that are probably tanking this season, you have to look at the draft as a way in which you can get a roster piece, a rotation piece, and maybe not a star, but someone that you can keep in-house on a decent price because, again, the CBA wants you to do that. They're going to probably pull the plug on their season a little bit earlier too, right?
Okay, so you're saying that it's because of CBA changes. That's actually interesting. I didn't expect you to come up with this answer
in
terms of, like, taking it in this direction.
You gave me 15 minutes? Did my work.
I'm like, oh, man, go get Mark Sy on the phone and think about this random question I'm going to ask you. No, it's interesting because I think, you know, obviously year to year you can always look at circumstances. Memphis was not intending to tank this year, right? And they just had literally the worst injury luck possible, and now they're in this group. And you got to respond to what you have. You know what I mean? Like, you know how crazy it would be if Memphis was like, hey, we're still trying to go all out with, like, Luke Kennard as our current leading scorer. You know what I mean? Like, it'd be wild. Same thing with Toronto. Toronto was, like, coming into the year, was like, okay, yes, we know that there's a pivot coming, and we can see the cliff because some of our top players are unrestricted free agents. But we're going to see and give it one last chance. Didn't work out with the new coach, new point guard. Bam, let's flip it and let's just go this different direction. And we all understand why the Raptors are where they are right now.
Yeah.
But they pivoted largely because of their circumstances. There's also the regular churn of teams that are just always going to be at the bottom. Like Detroit's on this list. Washington's on this list. Charlotte's on this list. Like, it's classic, really.
An interesting team is Utah, because they were pretty good for a little while, right? But now they're 28-37. They've gone through a losing streak. Lauri Markkanen's out.
Yeah.
A couple of losses have piled up, and because they've gone through a difficult part of their schedule, right? And they're still playing their guys, but they're probably finding that we just can't win games right now. The Western Conference is ridiculous. Look at the standings for 2 seconds. You're going to see how many very good teams
there
are.
The 10th seed is like the Warriors or the Lakers.
Seriously. Like, and so at some point, we're going to reside. Yeah. We're going to accept that we just have to tank.
Yeah, exactly. Utah's interesting because there are teams that have clearly tanked, but they're responding to a clear incentive, which I think the Raptors are kind of in this case too. But Utah is owed a top 10 protected pick. And it's like, after this year, if they don't convey it this year, I think it becomes like 2 seconds or whatever, right?
Yeah.
But last year, they've also tanked, kept their pick. They took the big 3-point shot blocking guy that they took.
Walker?
No.
Yes, sir.
No. The other one. Anyway, I'll look it up in a second. He hasn't played much this year. That's why it's hard to name him. But in any case, this year they're kind of doing the same thing, responding to that incentive. We saw last year the Mavs also did the same thing. They were actually in contention for the play-in, and they were like, actually, let's actually try to keep our top 10 protected pick. They managed to do that thanks to some lottery odds as well. And then on top of that, they were able to not only flip that into two assets, but they also were able to draft a player in Derek Lively who has been very useful for them. So we've seen people in, like, teams, I guess, respond to those incentives based on the pick protection. I guess that's what's happening in a way with Toronto as well, because Toronto's pick is top 6 protected. Mm-hmm. And the thing is, like, because there's so much tanking at the bottom, like, it's actually not easy for the Raptors to get any lower than 5th.
Hilarious enough.
Yeah. And even in 5th,
even lower,
we only got a 64% chance of keeping that pick. But,
yeah,
you know, this is when the Raptors play the Pistons. These are the conversations that end up going on. So
Mika Potter, by the way, is the name, right? Mika Potter?
No, that's not who they picked. No, no, it was a 9th pick.
Utah
Hold on.
Guy? Okay.
2023 NBA draft. Let me look this up. No, it's all good. Right. Well, that's a crazy one, though.
He's a shot-making big, so.
It was. Yeah, it was Taylor Hendricks at the ninth pick with Utah.
Yeah,
he
right
hasn't
now.
Played much, yeah.
He got hurt recently, too.
Yeah, he's a 6'10", stretch forward, yeah. Can block shots, stuff like that. I think they were like, he's going to Utah, he's going to be Andre Kirilenko.
And then?
I love draft comps, man. Draft comps are so, the process for them is just hilarious to me. It's like,
yeah.
Guys who have played in the organization before, so like Lively is now the next mm-hmm. Tyson Chandler. Or it's like, I mean, Grady gets compared to every white shooter kind of thing.
Kyle Korver.
Yeah.
And J.J. Redick, maybe. Yeah, I find those always interesting, only because of players like a Pascal Siakam. Like, I love going back to seeing his draft comps or just like how.
Dwayne Casey said like he could be like Bo Outlaw. And, no offense to Dwayne, who's such a nice man, just came on the show yesterday. And no offense to Bo Outlaw, but Pascal became a very different player.
Exactly. Yeah. And this goes back to what we talked about earlier in the conversation or this show is that, you know, Javon Freeman Liberty, right? Mm. Sometimes you just have to bank on a player exceeding expectations.
Is that your guy? Is Javon your guy?
He might become that guy. He might become my Norm Powell.
You brought him up like three times today, and I'm just like, and it's fine. Yeah. Like, it's not that. I'm just like, I didn't know you had this affinity.
Yeah, I don't know. It's like there's an aesthetic about his game that I find very, very pleasing.
You were talking about it, yeah.
Yeah, so I think that's kind of what it is. But
got you.
You go into the personality, the mantra, how a player operates day by day, and I've only heard really great things about Javon, his work ethic, and you know if it's coming down to a player because he already has the tools of them just like getting reps and figuring it out investing themselves, like that's not a bad bet on someone that you believe in.
No, I'm not questioning the bet at all. In fact, it's very familiar because this is maybe a more general experience, but especially with the Raptors, like there's like a guy or two every year that I'm like, I'm really convinced on this guy, even though he isn't necessarily shown it in like the bigger flashes or on a consistent basis, or even sometimes they don't even play that many minutes. I'm just convinced about this guy or that guy. The original version of me for me was like, I'm just convinced on Sonny Weems, man. Like Sonny Weems is my guy. Yeah. Sonny Weems is my guy. I believe he has the most talent on the team. And like he played, he was a decent player, got a decent career. He's still playing, by the way. He's playing for the Guangdong Southern Tigers. I found this out recently. So I will be going to Guangdong actually later tonight or later this season. And I will be purchasing his jersey. I'm not even kidding.
Sure.
But in any case, like there's little flyers, I guess, as Raptor fans that we're used to sort of picking up on. You latching on to Javon is like me latching on to Utah like a couple years ago.
Yeah.
Like I was like, you're my guy, and this is who I believe in. You know what I mean? So, yeah. Like,
two nights ago, this is funny that we're talking about this. I went down a rabbit hole because I wanted to do a segment with you of players that the Raptors just missed on or players that they gave up on too early. And so I went down this huge rabbit hole for like years, man. I went back down to 2013.
Years.
The
wow.
The only guy that you might say maybe they should have kept on board is O'Shea Brissett, in my opinion.
Yeah,
that's the only guy. But outside of that, they made the right decision in most cases. Like, no one's really become, like, a star by any means. And also, they were pretty good for a long stretch, too.
Yeah. But I think that's the flip side of this. So it's like, and that's not to invalidate, again, that people can pick some favorites and, you know, might not work out. Like, realistically, this is like you get one or two guys to work out. You know, like Fred, for example, back in the day. It's like, dude, if you hit on any of these, it's a penny stock.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But, yeah, I mean, it does sort of put into perspective that, like, especially maybe even us in the media was like, we'll focus so much. And maybe the core of the roster is like largely the same, not this year, but in general, the core of the roster is so much the same. So you focus on like the changing parts, the little marginal pieces.
Yeah.
And it's like people worry about Delano. Like we just saw, for example, a lot of reaction of like, well, you know, Raptors give him a Delano too early. Let's ignore all the circumstances that led to that in the first place. But in any case, it's like, generally speaking, these penny stocks that you let go of probably end up not becoming much.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so, but it's still fun. Still fun. Do you have other guys that you like randomly stand? You know, I know, for example, Alex was like a huge fan of Matt Thomas for a long time. And then Speed Mihailuk, like it didn't really work out for him.
What's the common denominator there? I don't know.
They play for the Raptors. Shooting guard.
Norm Powell was one, definitely. Yeah. Who else? I'd have to look
around.
That's
a great hit, though.
Sonny Weems was definitely was one there. Who else would have been that guy? James Johnson, for some reason,
That's a great pull.
I really
stand. That's a great pull.
Yeah.
Because you're like, he's 6'8". He's strong. And he could shoot a little bit. He can handle a little bit, too. And I was like,
could cram on people.
Right. He had that dunk on Drummond. So it was like, all those factors, you might mix it together. It just didn't really click the same way. Mm-hmm. But
that version of him could be really good in this NBA.
Mm.
Right? Okay. 6'8", who could, like, you know, probably guard some centers, not all of them, but definitely, like, power forwards.
No, you give me the scouting report on him, absolutely. You're like, okay, yeah, he could work out. But I think there's other factors that led to him not working out consistently. Sure.
Is he still in the league?
He is still in the league. He's on the Pacers bench.
Pacers, right. Yeah.
He's their enforcer. No, I'm not even kidding. He's actually their enforcer. Other Raptors fan favorites back. I mean, like, I don't know. I mean, if I don't want to really go back, like, Jamario Moon was one of those for me.
Yeah.
Love Pops Mensah-Bonsu, you know.
Yeah.
It's basically whoever Matt Devlin pushed at that time.
Pop Sal?
No, I never got that far in, man. I like Roko Ukic as well. But again, like, this is Raptors culture, really. Sure. You do latch on, and hopefully some of these guys pan out. So I will be rooting for, well, this year, I don't know if I've actually fully decided. I guess Jonte is kind of the one I'm going to try to latch on to right now.
Yeah.
But I think for you, it's Javon. And I guess I'm curious to see what other people will find and, you know, find interest and meaning in some of these games. But anyway, time now for Between the Lines, brought to you by Bet Rivers. Take a chance. I couldn't believe this when I looked it up, Amit Mon.
Yeah.
The line tonight against the 11-win Detroit Pistons. It's in Detroit, to be fair, but it's against the 11-win Pistons. The Pistons are actually favored.
Those used to be home games for the Raptors.
They're favored by -3.5. So it's not even like that, like, you know, it's not like, like a 1.5. Like, just flip a coin. They're an 11-win team.
They are.
And they're favored by this. I actually would love to know how many games the Pistons have been favored against. To be fair, like, Raptors got a lot of, potential absences. We already know that RJ is going to be out with personal reasons. Hopefully he's okay.
Yep.
Chris is out long-term. You know, Jakob, Scotty, those guys are out. Trent and Quickly are questionable.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't see them play last game. Hopefully they've been able to play just to sort of make it work. If they're not available, I totally get it from the Pistons side, the line, but I'm just like, it's a little bit shocking. It's like you're dipping your toe in really cold water when you see that you're going up against an 11-win team and you're the underdog.
Well,
how could you be under 11 wins?
To be fair,
All
right, so they have 11 wins, but they have 3 wins in their last 7 games.
Okay.
Right?
That's
so
good.
So that's something.
Okay.
And they're in a different, kind of a similar phase of the Raptors, but they're, like, they're playing a lot of players. They're trying to get a feel for who they are, who fits together. But at the same time, they're actually playing. Those guys are playing.
Okay.
Right? And for the Raptors,
really parse
those
this
guys
one
are not playing. Like, IQ is not playing. RJ is not playing. Gary Trent Jr. Is seemingly not going to be playing either. So if those guys are in the lineup,
if those guys aren't in, like, I mean,
it's a different game, right?
For sure,
but
they're
not. And if IQ is not playing, RJ is not playing, like, talking Javon Freeman Liberty and Jonte Porter.
Listen,
like,
man, they're going to come through.
They're
going to
get their run here. Yeah. Even like it being -3.5, like the Pistons, like, they're really playing for something. I would say just at least for jobs, identity, culture, no different
pride,
than the Raptors, right?
Pride.
You want to show you're better. Like, it's been a lot of losing for them.
Yeah.
Right? A lot of losing.
I don't know.
Remember the last time the Raptors were in Detroit?
I do remember the last time the Raptors were in Detroit. It was a 28-game losing streak, and the Raptors helped them snap that one as well. Yeah, it's always going to be a fun game for sure between the Raptors and the Pistons. You can always expect a lot of fans, busloads of fans across the border. I don't know, man.
We really have to accept that.
Are we going to pick the Pistons here, or are we picking the Raptors?
I'm taking the Pistons.
You're taking the Pistons.
I mean, IQ's not playing, then I'm going to take the Pistons.
Is it important for us to lose this game for tanking purposes?
I mean, like you said, man, it's hard for us to move down anymore. I mean, the Grizzlies, like,
I mean, if you lose to the Pistons, if you're underdogs versus the Pistons, it might not be that hard for you to move down.
The Grizzlies,
is Savannah Hamilton going to get the walk-off interview tonight?
I want to get a few. She should get a few more.
Okay.
Hasn't been enough. But actually, Desmond Bane is supposed to start or come back pretty soon for the Grizzlies. So they're going to start probably playing a little bit better. And when that happens, I mean, it gets down to the lottery balls and see how things go, which is another conspiracy that you have, which maybe get into a different day.
Don't worry, we'll get to that a different day when we really, really don't have topics. But man, I don't know. I gotta pick the Raptors, man. I would wait to the very last second to see who's available. But if Trent and Quickly are playing, like, the Pistons are playing better, as you mentioned, they do have more of their young guys healthy and available. Yeah. But
also, aside
on
from
principle
the,
alone, I'm like,
yeah, I know. But aside from the very fact that, you know, they're in this position, this is like the last game of their road trip. And they've been like flying a lot of different places. They're going pretty much across.
All right, you know what? You've talked me into going with the Pistons, I guess.
Yeah.
Wow.
And again, like, if the Raptors win, like, that's going to mean that a lot of players step up.
Like, I don't necessarily need the Raptors to win. That's not what this is about. I think it's just on principle. I'm like, ooh.
This is actually a game I wouldn't mind seeing them win. Like the other games, Denver, Portland, Phoenix, like when they lost, like I know you and JD were saying that you felt something after that Denver win. I felt nothing. I'm like, this is okay. Like they competed.
Oh, you felt nothing? Really?
I felt nothing.
You didn't feel a little bit pride? Like, damn, they fought hard and they lost.
Yeah, that's what I felt, right? But I wasn't like sad that they lost because like it was a tasteful loss is what I look at it.
Well, this is the first off, that was Between the Lines brought to you by Bet Rivers. Take a chance. And that does it for the Raptors show today, where we rationalize losses every day on the program because that's where we're on the season. So
I want to see him win tonight.
I just want to see good basketball. You know what?
Yeah.
So Raptors Pistons, that's your place for tonight. I've been your host, Will Liu, and you've been listening to the Raptors show on the Sportsnet Radio Network, brought to you by Campbell's new Chunky Spicy Soup. It's time to get fired up. Make sure you find the Raptors show, you know, subscribe, rate, all that kind of stuff. Big thanks to everybody involved. Savannah Hamilton, Mark Stein for joining us. We'll be back tomorrow.